This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Australia's number one award-winning show for exploring sex, sexuality, and self.
Hide and seek.
Visit joy.org.au/hide and seek. Good evening and welcome to Hide and Seek, your show for exploring sex, sexuality and self. My name is Dean Beck and I have a very special co-host with me today. He is from starobserver.com.au. You may have heard him on the line doing our roundups for news. Matthew Wade, thank you very much for joining us on Hide and Seek tonight.
Ah, it's a pleasure to be here, Dean.
We're going to have to be on our best behaviour tonight because we've got a very, very special guest joining us.
We do.
Big announcement for the state of Victoria, but we'll get to that a little later when Victoria's own Sexuality and Gender Commissioner. I always get that wrong. Gender and Sexuality Commissioner. Rowena Allen is her name. She'll be joining us to talk about an announcement that was only just made an hour or so ago.
A massive announcement and one that's kind of been in the pipeline for a little while now. I remember, you know, it was in the way, so it's kind of spoken
30
about
years,
a while.
I think.
No, oh, well, I mean. But yes, it's a massive announcement, so it's brilliant news.
It is indeed. Dean Beck and Matthew Wade with you on Hide and Seek tonight. And whilst it is your show for exploring sex, sexuality and self, we have an exclusive, Matt.
We do.
And it is my great pleasure to welcome to the program... Victoria's Gender and Sexuality Commissioner, Rowena Allen.
Oh, good morning.
Hello.
Afternoon, evening even.
What an incredible introduction, Rowena. That was regal. I love that.
Well, you know, the closest thing that I'm going to get to having a queen in this place now, Rowena, you're very, very happy today, aren't you?
I call this a good day at the office, Dean.
Yeah, it is a good day at the office. Tell us why.
Well, today, Daniel Andrews has announced $15 million towards a Melbourne-based Pride Centre for our community. And this is an enormous amount of money, and good on him. It's fantastic. And $6.4 million for adult transgender and gender-diverse people for a gender centre. So this is an expansion of the gender centre at Monash.
Right. So that's not connected to the Pride Centre?
Well, there'll be hopes down the track that potentially gender services will be operating out of the Pride Centre,
right.
But
yep.
Nothing's ruled in and nothing's ruled out of the Pride Centre at the moment. The Andrews government is very committed to co-design, which is basically code for consultation and working together on everything. But, you know, obviously we want to see how many services we can offer from the Pride Centre, and services to trans and gender-diverse communities is really important at the centre of it all.
I guess, and you just mentioned, you know, there'll be a lot of consultation involved with, I imagine, LGBTI community groups, organisations, I guess, but in the long run, how do you envisage the centre? Like, what do you see being in there? Like, you know, groups, you know, just as a pipeline, you know, what do you kind of see being in the centre?
I would hope it's a great place of celebration, as well as service delivery, you know. So I'm, you know, imagining in my vision, and people will have different visions, so this is not gospel, but in my vision, I imagine coming into a cafe and being able to sit down in a really friendly and opening space, and potentially having a Studio of Joy right there, maybe, and, you know, Hares and Hainer's bookshop or something like that. You know, a place where you can just come in and go out and feel connected to community, or you can come in and speak to a very groovy concierge who can show you to a service upstairs around the place, you know, and that people are feeling really welcome, where we all get along together and you know, have a great time. So, you know, I think there's lots of things that we need to celebrate, and I think we need to celebrate our archives and having a place where we can have more displays and things on show. I think those things are really important, to get the AIDS quilts out more often. And
this particular premises at 225 Bourke Street has got a limited life. We know that the City Council want to do things with it, and we're going to have to be kicked out. And there are multiple people or organisations from our community connected to this building, all of which will at some stage in the not too distant future have to move. Will the Pride Centre be up and running, functional, fitted out in time to accommodate joy and to be our new home. I know that's putting a lot of words in your mouth, but...
This announcement tonight has all of those factors in play. You know, we know we've been working with the City of Melbourne on your behalf about the building. I should say PricewaterhouseCoopers have been doing that piece of feasibility studies. This hasn't got to come out of nowhere, Dean. And, you know, we've very much got that. I certainly have, and I know Minister Martin Foley has. This is very front and centre that, you know, there's no way we're going to let Joy go off air. We need to make sure there's continuity and balance that with, you know, the right building, the right place, and all those. Well, you imagine how many organisations with different needs and timelines and things we... Now the work begins, I think.
Indeed, yeah. Indeed. Now, $15 million isn't going to go that far, quite frankly. This, I envisage, would be a great sort of starting point for philanthropics to commit to this project. I know that there are wealthy individuals in our community who were very upset by some of the things that have gone by in the past and have held on to their funds for a more secure purpose for the community when it appeared. And this sounds like it could be that.
I think it is. And I think this is the Andrews government saying, you know, we're showing leadership in this space. We're putting our dollars on the table. And, of course, it's my job now to go and find matching dollars and grow it as big as we can to make it, you mm-hmm. know, as we envisage, bigger than anything we've had before. And I think we need to keep our community focused on trying to make it the best we can. And I think people are quite interested. But when I have spoken to people in the past, they've said, well, what commitment has government got? Well, I think it's important that someone's got to go first and put their money on the table. Today we've done that. And now it's about, you know, finding philanthropy and finding community orgs and different people that are interested and corporate groups. You know, we need to be open to all the possibilities in that as well and make it something that's really sustainable, bulletproof to say, you know, whatever governments come and go in the future, whatever crises arise, you know. And there are groups that, I should say, there are groups that will come in and the groups that we don't even know will exist in 20 years. Mm. You know, groups that, you know, interest groups that need to pop up. We need to have a facility that allows those groups. Some of our community groups won't be here. Some we don't even know yet.
There's a school of thought that would suggest that we wouldn't need a Pride Centre in 20 years. It'll be so irrelevant.
Well, that would be fabulous. That would be fabulous. But what a great building and what a great investment in the next 20 years.
I still think we have a culture that is worth preserving.
I do. And I think we'll have history that we'll want to preserve, you know. And certainly speaking to the really committed folks in archives, they're just busting out of the spaces they have. And, you know, if nothing else. I mean, yes, I would love to have the day we don't need a Pride Centre. But, you know, always going to need a good place for coffee.
But even if we get to that point, I guess, do you see, I mean, I personally feel like a centre like that would always be invaluable because having a space that obviously recognises our history but also has a place for all the different organisations to kind of be in the one place, I think, is incredible. I mean, I guess, how do you see the collaboration happening in that space between different groups?
Well, I think this building is a classic example. You've already got Queer Film, it's Summer, Joy. There's already collaboration, but I think you've got to meet in the elevator or go into each other's floors. Hopefully, we've got something that we can build that has a lot more spaces to do that collaboration. You know what I call the photocopy collaboration when you know things happen around a photocopy or around coffee, and you know we can share volunteers and we can share resources and ideas because there's a lot of drain, as you know, on the volunteers that we've got.
The Victorian AIDS Council have tonight put out a media release. We all know that they sold their building in South Yarra for near $15 million not so long ago. They need a new home as well. My understanding of what I've read from their media release is basically they congratulated the Andrews government on their commitment to the Pride Centre and will look forward to reading the feasibility study as PricewaterhouseCoopers has produced, and they will... in due time, make the right decision for them.
Yep, and I think that's a great response. And I just checked with the minister just before coming in the studio. I'm glad he takes my text at 9 o'clock to say that he is going to release the report at the budget time, same time as budget. So that's
the PricewaterhouseCoopers report.
Yes, it'll be released at the same time as the budget. So that's about a week.
Yeah,
it's about a week. So then that's really important because I because I think it's really important that if you take time to come to the consultations, and we had three consultations, we had a survey that went out to 120 different organisations. If you take the time to be, you know, consulted, you should see the results of that. So I'm really committed to that. I'm so glad the minister's committed to that, and people can then, as I said, there's no one's being pressured into the building. Nobody's not welcome either.
Can you give us an overview of what is in that document? What they were doing? What is the feasibility study?
Well, the feasibility study is saying, you know, do we need a Pride Centre? Mm. You know, what's your space capacity now? What do you see it in 5 years? So there's, you know, some details there. But it's an early stage. What needs to happen now is a full business plan.
Right.
So that you can say no decisions have been in concrete, yeah. Literally, about where it's going to be or, you know, anything like that, or the design, or whether it's going to be a greenfields brand new site, or we're going to try and buy something and retrofit it or whatever. So, and people basically said yes, overwhelmingly yes. And I thought my rural mates would have a problem with it, but absolutely not. They said, we love the place to connect and get Wi-Fi in Melbourne, and when we come to town, it's really important. So, you know, and I think the other part of the Pride Centre is, you know, having a virtual centre, having the ability to connect. Coming from the country, I'm really passionate about that. We need to make sure that we have a virtual Pride Centre in this Pride Centre as well, and we connect to regional centres as well. Really, really important.
How do you get 120 community groups to agree to anything?
Well,
they can't agree within themselves, let alone externally.
Well, I think that's the bit where, you know, there are enough people that are saying this is something we want to explore seriously. And, of course, you know, pending rents and, you know, people are meeting in kitchens. You know, people have got boxes in carports, you know, in garages. They're pretty clear to clean it out. I think people see the benefits in coming together and doing that collaboration. Some organisations, as you know, need a small amount of space for most of the year, and then for 1 month of the year they need to expand, you know, having all that flexibility. Well, you wouldn't want to get commercial rent for a large facility for that sort of, you know, for a whole year.
We're speaking with Rowena Allen, Victoria's Gender and Sexuality Commissioner. We're talking about the announcement of the Victorian Government's pledge to pitch in $15 million to build Australia's first Pride Centre. Now, there is some debate as to whether this is Australia's first Pride Centre. There's something in Sydney that was a shoebox that was registered as the Pride Centre.
Well, first successful ongoing Pride Centre. How's that?
Glamorous Pride Centre?
Glamorous Pride Centre.
I'll go with that.
Well, you know, Melbourne likes to always do one better than Sydney, so I'm...
It's not hard.
Well, there are already a number of Pride Centres even outside, offshore, you know. In San Francisco, they've already got a Pride Centre, and I heard that Melbourne's one is supposed to be, intended to be, bigger than the San Francisco
Pride
Centre.
Well, we'll learn from their mistakes, I think.
Well, that's also what the feasibility study shows.
Rowena is going on an international tour of every Pride Centre just to get it right.
One thing I was curious about that you touched on earlier was, I know that you're very passionate about Victoria's rural and regional LGBTI community. You know, having, I guess, a lot of these important groups and organisations centralised in the city. I mean, you mentioned having that kind of virtual centre as well. What did you mean by that? Like, just kind of having that internet correspondence, or could you elaborate a bit on that?
I think being able to, you know, Skype into sessions, functions, workshops, that's really important. I think this is probably for my benefit, but a community calendar of events would be incredibly fabulous to have online, so we don't clash with...
It's crazy.
Bendigo Film, you know, Festival
last
and
weekend,
out in the open in Shepparton. And
so many things that clashed last weekend, and none of them were fully patronised because they were all clashing.
Yeah.
I don't know why last weekend was so special.
I'm not sure either, but, you know, clearly for my diary, it would be really, really helpful. I'm sure for Joy's and everybody else's, it would be great.
So as in, like, from the Pride Centre calendar of events that wouldn't only just be in the city but also
absolutely
be around?
Yeah, no, absolutely not. And then hopefully...
A global calendar of events.
I don't know how many more events I could get to, but I'll try.
What do we know about this gender centre and the money for that?
Well, this is incredibly exciting. So under the task force, we have a Health and Human Services Working Party, and I chair a trans and gender diverse reference group for that group. So we've been working on a model that will best suit going forward in the future. And as you know, the Children's Hospital received money last year, and they've been able to halve their waiting lists. But that closes at, you know, that closes at 17. They try to refer after that to adult services, and there really wasn't a lot at Monash to refer to. So this has been a train crash coming. And
now, Monash has been under a bit of a cloud in the last 6 months. They've had some major staff changes at that clinic, and there's been some concern from some of the frequent users of it.
Yeah, and I spoke to Brenda Appleton just again before I came on air, and Monash has given some real commitments about how they're going to work with the community in the future. And we're working really closely with the Trans and Gender Diverse Reference Committee to make sure that that model is statewide, you know, and we make sure that we, as I said to Matt before, we make sure we pick up people that are in, you know, in Wodonga, in Warrnambool. It's really important because there aren't the services that we need for trans and gender diverse people in those places.
Which feeds in nicely to a little thing that you tabled not so long ago. It's called a roadshow. Any word on its development and what that might look like?
I'm certainly going on a roadshow, I can tell you that much.
Rowena on a pushbike.
Whether it's Rowena or a pushbike. But I'll need to come back on your show.
Sure.
Probably in a week.
You have an open invitation anytime.
And give you more details about that. But, you know, I was really clear with the minister when I took on the role that I didn't want it to be Melbourne-based, you know, centric and focused, and that's really important to get out in the rural areas.
After the budget, you're actually going to have a portfolio funded with money.
I know.
What's that going to look like?
It's going to look like a lot of work and a lot of fun. But you know, my secret weapon is I just gather other people around me to do the work for me, right. Dean. That's what I do.
Rowena Allen, congratulations on getting Big Dan to open his wallet and pitch in $15 million for our Pride Centre. It's a great start, and we look forward to the developments as they progress.
Thanks for having me on.
Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9. It's the show for exploring sex, sexuality and self. Now that the boss is gone, we can get a little saucy, Matthew Wade.
Yes, we can.
Now, I've asked you in tonight to give me a refresher on what the young ones are doing sexually tonight. Now, I come across these little young ones from time to time. I shouldn't call them that. Young men who are very versed in all sorts of things. And I'm putting that down to direct access to things like internet, where whether we like it or not, it's an educator of sorts.
Yep. It can be very problematic at times.
Can be. Agreed. Yes. Yes, it can be very problematic at times. But it also has, I think, extended one's
sexual tastes.
Adventures. Would I be right in saying that?
I think so. I mean, I'm only going off of porn and things that I was exposed to, you know, and even in the last 5 to 10 years. But I think, you know,
when I was growing up, there was only magazines. Yeah. They didn't even have the internet.
Hey, I had that phase too. When I was when I was beginning early teen years, like the centerfold in Clio was like all that I had. That was my Bible. But
that's where I started too.
Yeah. But no, these days I think it's the proliferation of not only diverse porn, but also things like Grindr. You know, people have these profiles and they can basically state exactly what they're looking for sexually. It's right there. They can specify, I want this. And I guess through having that kind of global, in some sense, community, you know, you're able to talk to people and be exposed to different things sexually that you wouldn't otherwise. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it sure does. But, you know, when I was growing up, guys that might have been into what we'd term esoteric sexual practices would have been at least 45, 50, 60 plus, and or at least perceived that age when you're 19 or 20.
Yep.
But all the kids are doing.
Well, you know what, Dean? I know that all the kids are definitely
doing. They are. They're all doing it. Some of them have been doing it since before they even came out.
Well, maybe I'm even not in that bracket because, you know what, I've spoken to a number of young people younger than I am, you know, people that are 18, people that are 19 that have just, you know, begun to spread their Grindr wings that are already very astute and already know exactly what they're looking for. And sometimes...
Hell yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, like, but beyond just like vanilla, you know, more than just anal sex, like they want everything, which is incredible. Like, I'm all about sex positivity, but it's interesting how, yeah, you mentioned... That culture probably wasn't present, you know, 20 years ago. It was a lot more maybe limited. I'm not sure.
Yet, at the same time, we're still not providing the foundation education that we should be.
Completely agree. I think even now, like, I mean, I can remember getting zero sex education beyond the obvious heterosexual, you know, and reproductive kind of education in high school. But I feel like it's similar now, you know. I mean, to talk about safe schools for a second, they are kind of bringing in more education and awareness around sex and gender diverse identities. But I think on a more let's say, risque level. Sex itself is still so stigmatized and taboo, like no one really wants to talk about it.
Yeah, why is that? I mean, seriously, people need to get over themselves.
I agree. I think it's such a universal experience. I mean, many people experience it in different ways, their sexuality, but I think if people were more open to talking about it with each other, there would be so much less stigma around it, and people would be a lot more educated as well.
You don't have to ram it down people's throats on a radio station like I do. I get that. But, you know, the reason that I do this is so that there's a kind of conversation around it, you know, that kind of breaks down some of that ridiculous carry-on because...
Yep. I used to be a lot more self-conscious about addressing sex in front of other people, but these days, you know what, I meet someone new, they're like, how's it going? And I'll be like, when's the last time you had sex? And the conversation proceeds from there. I feel like I...
Hang on, Wellbeck. You say, when's the last time you had sex? And they say, yesterday. And you say, great, do you want to do it again? Is that what you mean? Is it your pickup line?
No, it's actually not. It's funny because a lot of people interpret it that way. But I actually love talking about sex. I feel like it's something that is so... unique to everyone, but also universal and shared in another way. Sure. So I feel like, and like you were saying before, you know, I feel like sharing that knowledge and experience creates better education around sex. And I think, and also just I'm personally really interested in the topic.
Next week on Hide and Seek, we are speaking to a woman who's putting together a sex symposium that's being held here in Melbourne in late May. And it does a number of, I guess, information seminars and that sort of thing. And there's lots of those things that are more, well, there are more and more of those things emerging.
I think so too. I mean, I've spotted it even more recently. Maybe it's just because I wasn't looking before, but, you know, there are spaces and groups where you can meet up and essentially masturbate with other people, you know, in a space that's like not beyond just touching. Like, it's like as in it doesn't go beyond that. It's literally
like Melbourne Wankers.
Yeah, that's it.
They've been around for 30 years.
That's why I was hesitant to say it because I only became familiar with it about 2 weeks ago.
They came out of the fear around HIV.
Oh wow!
That's how that all started.
We're all learning tonight, Dean. But what I mean is those kind of groups and those spaces. I mean, it's just even sex on premises venues. You know, there's spaces for people to explore sex and sexuality in a fairly comfortable and safe environment.
And there's things like Red Zone and Gold and those sorts of fetish events that are regular and people can patronise. And I tell you what, all ages go to those.
Yep.
All shapes and sizes, so I'm told.
And people coordinate those. And people coordinate those things online as well, like through Grindr and Scruff and those kind of apps. You know, people, if someone's looking to organise some, if someone has a particular fetish or particular interest sexually, you know, they can organise to meet up with a group of people with similar or like-minded interests and go for it.
One of the delights of our community is a little corner in a retail store that is sometimes a sponsor of this program. At Manhouse, they have a pin-up board with some little notes that you can write a note and leave it for somebody.
Okay.
You know, I'm 32, years ago. I'm 32, muscly body, into X, Y, and Z. Here's my phone number.
Like personal?
Yeah, totally. Oh my God. It's a pin-up board. It's great.
I didn't think that existed beyond, the walls of bathroom cubicles. That's incredible.
It's fantastic.
Oh, my God. I need to check that out.
You should do a story on it.
I actually think that would be very interesting. I would love to do that.
Great story.
Yeah.
And actually... Ring some of the numbers and
have a chat.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh my God, that would actually be incredible. I love that idea. I guess that, I mean, it's a bit different in, for instance, like a beat or some place.
It's very different to an app.
It's very different to an app, but I kind of find it a bit more exciting. I think the idea, the concept of that kind of, you know, you don't know who you're going to be engaging with, and it's very, like...
You don't know whether it's bullshit either, I guess.
That's true. Although I imagine, would someone go to the effort of, like, visiting a venue like that just to kind of...
Maybe not.
You know, troll
but
someone?
They do on an app, don't they?
I mean, yes, they definitely do. Which I feel like I've got a better radar for that now. Like, you know, when you get, like, you're someone who...
All right, Matthew Wade, what is your app of choice?
Funnily enough, as of late, Zero. I haven't used an app in quite a while.
Mother Teresa over here.
No, it's actually not. It's different. So this is me, like, I won't bore you with this story, but in the last year or so, I've become really interested in gay history, queer history, but more particularly like subculture around cruising and beats and sex on premises venues. So I guess I've kind of moved away from apps and explored that a bit more just to kind of, I don't know, like it was such a massive prevalent part of gay history back in the day and still exists now.
What do you want to know about Beats?
No, I was talking to, I mean, I've been there. Like, I think, so I've kind of moved away from apps. I find it.
But they're nothing like they used to be.
As in Beats?
Yeah.
No, I don't. I mean, I guess I can't speak from personal experience, but I from through.
Well, they've been re-landscaped or whatever.
Closed down. Yeah. But I think I was speaking to someone who used to do. Yeah. I was speaking to someone who used to do like a walking tour of all the Beats around Melbourne, and he was saying how at the end of the day, like even if these places, you know, close down, you know, the whole point of the Beat culture is that it's transitional. Like, you know, a new Beat will pop up every, you know, so often. Another one will close. You know, there'll always be a public space that men will frequent to have sex with other men.
Hi, this is Dan Savage, and you're listening to Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9.
Thanks, Dan. Matthew Wade is with me. I'm Dean Beck, and you're listening to Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9. It is your show for exploring sex, sexuality, and self. We've been talking about how the young ones do it. Apparently, it's not that different to how we used to do it back in my day. Yes. Or still do it. Anyway, they're just doing more of it, I think. Now, what you were talking off air, which we shouldn't reference, but I just did, about what were you saying about?
I guess I was talking about how for apps. Me, yeah, moving away from apps. I guess I've been exploring more other ways of, you know, engaging in sex.
So how do you do that? Because if you're not apping, because everybody apps now.
Well, I can pinpoint where I moved away from apps. So I was casually strolling, you know, minding my business. I needed to go to the bathroom, so I went into the bathroom. I noticed that there was a gentleman, a suitor, giving me the eye.
Meaning he was wearing a suit?
No, meaning that he was like a prospective suitor, like a sexual suitor.
He had his cock out,
I'm pointing that if that hasn't been used before. Right. Yeah, yes, he did. Well, no, yeah. And it kind of blew my mind. I was like, I can't believe like there's this space where guys come that's very public and engage in, you know, whatever. So I started to explore that more.
You accidentally fell across this or you were targeting it?
It sounds like a joke. It sounds like I'm lying, but actually I was very much accidental the first time. And then the next...
The first time I came across it was at age 11 too.
Age 11? Yeah, oh my goodness. Yeah. I was a late bloomer then. Goodness. Do you strictly stick to apps, Dean, or do you have a branch? Like are you an app person or?
I have one app that I use. One website that I use another occasionally. But, you know, I have a really lovely network of fuck buddies.
So you don't even need the apps. Like, you're already set.
Quite often I'll connect with them through the app, mm-hmm. but that's really just the communication device rather than anything else.
It just seems exhausting to me. I know some of my friends that have, I think they've got every app there is to possibly have on their phone, and I just think, what do you actually spend the rest of your day doing? I feel like you just go through all the different apps. That's why for me, visiting a bathroom, for instance, or, you know, meeting someone serendipitously or spontaneously for a quick something.
Yes.
Can be a lot more fruitful than, you know, trolling, you know, Grindr for 2 hours trying to find some sort of gratification.
And being mucked around left, right and centre.
Yes.
So, sex on premises venues, where do they sit in your scope?
I'm a hypocrite because I think they're actually incredible spaces. I think it's amazing that spaces like that exist for gay men to go in a safe, consensual, mostly consensual environment and explore the sex and explore the sexuality. I remember the first time I went, I think I was acting like a tourist. I was walking around the maze of rooms like, oh my goodness, like look at the lighting.
You weren't talking, were you?
I was talking. Oh, I broke the cardinal rule. And I remember the person I was with was like, you know, no one else ever, it was silent. No one's talking. And I was talking at the level I am right now, just like, oh, they're playing like this dance song and like look at the lights and like, oh, there's a spa there, how exciting.
Shut up, Matthew.
That's probably what everyone was thinking. But you know what, Dean? I think a lot of people have lost the art. I think as much as people go there for sex, I think it also can be a place to form interesting connections with people. Like, you know, in passing, it's in transit. Like, you might never see this person again, but why not have a little chat in the sauna or have a nice conversation?
Do people still pick each other up at bars or dance parties?
I think so. I mean, I don't think maybe as much. Maybe at the Peel. At other places, maybe not that much, but definitely it still happens, I guess. You might share a glance. I mean, maybe it's more later in the evening, like when it gets to 2 or 3 a.m., people are a little bit faded, you know, they're kind of looking for Mr. Right Now, you know, they just kind of, that's when it happens. Earlier on, not so much. I think it's shifted predominantly onto apps. But yeah, what is your opinion on sex on premises venues, Dean?
I think they can serve a great purpose. I think for some people, because of their domestic arrangements, they're essential, and that doesn't have to mean anything other than, you know, I don't understand why people move in with someone and there's a no sex rule in the house.
Wait, what? I haven't heard of that before. What is
yeah,
that?
Yeah, no, I don't know. It's weird. anyway, so, you know, a lot of people don't take trade back to their house.
No, they don't. I think that's what's the beauty of a sex on premises venue is, because it's all kind of there. And beyond, and like we mentioned earlier, like, you know, if you're not just looking for, you know, anal sex or blowjobs or handjobs or something, if you want something outside of that, you know, there is a space there for you to find like-minded people to...
And let's face it, you don't have to clean up the mess.
I mean, that's you know, actually, that's the main perk of that venue. Like, you can just, I mean, the only downside is if you've just walked in after somebody's finished, you know, and you kind of have to...
Yeah, that's not so great. Yeah, good point.
At Joy 94.9, there are approximately 300 volunteers bringing you over 75 shows, 24 hours per day, 7 days a week. That's a lot of facts and figures to take in, but here's one more number for you to think about. 1-300-569-949. That's the number to call to talk to the Joy sales team about becoming a Joy sponsor. One phone call can get your business on air and online, reaching thousands of Joy listeners at a price you can afford. 1-300-JOY-949. That's 1-300-569-949.
Matthew Wade, it's been an absolute delight having you join us on Hide and Seek tonight. It's been great.
I've loved it, Dean. I absolutely excel at the opportunity to talk about sex. So,
We might have to get you back on a little more, mate, and see if you can help out with the program in other ways. So, now you are, of course, the Melbourne Journal for StarObserver.com.au. They've got a new editor.
We do.
You've got a new boss.
Yes, he started literally this week. It's so exciting. Exciting and sad, because obviously Ilias, our esteemed editor who left, is moving to London, but Corey, who started this week, has been amazing so far, and it's really exciting to have a new head on board.
And a new editor. Now, Shannon Power has settled in very well, and you've got a new person in Queensland as well.
Yes, Elliot. So, yeah, the team's going great. It's a bit of a shuffle, but yeah, we're all doing great, so it's very exciting.
Now, and what can we expect in your next, I don't know, lineup? Well, you'll be doing a story on Today with Rowena, no doubt.
Yes, that's coming out. That'll come out tomorrow, undoubtedly. There's a few stories in the pipeline, to be honest. Not inspired by this show at all, but I really like writing stories that have a lot of sex positivity. Like, I wrote a story a while ago about
do that
like,
thing on the pin board.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. Seriously. I love to write more stories about that kind of stuff, because I think, like you mentioned earlier, you know, the dialogue around sex is so limited. Not many people talk about it, and I think the more people did, the more informed everyone would be.
I think it's not easy to write about.
It's not, because it's a very sensitive topic. I think a lot of people see it in a very different ways, but I think it's important to talk about it. So, granted, it can be done with sensitivity. Yes.
Keep talking about it and do some of that here on Hide and Seek. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks.
And thank you for listening, because you have made this show one of the most popular on Joy, and we appreciate that very much. You can, of course, check out the podcast, and David is wonderful at putting those together for us. You can find that at joy.org.au/hideandseek, and you can follow me on Twitter at Dean Beck on Air. Coming up next is Black, White and Rainbow with Andy Kay, who will take you through the evening. Till next time, keep well, take care, and bye for now.
You can subscribe to Hide and Seek's podcast for free. Visit joy.org.au/hideandseek for more information. Suggest a topic, a guest, or provide feedback. Email hideandseek@joy.org.au.
Hide and seek.
Hide and seek.
Hide and seek.
Hide and seek.
Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.